Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final pairing in the United States Open Championship. The players are Jack Nicklaus of North Palm Beach, Florida, and Chris Mascaro of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Mascaro has the honor. Play away, please.
Boy, that always puts a smile on my face. How appropriate. Here we are on the heels of the U.S. Open, and I get to have that. Hello, next on the T Nation. Thank you so much for coming back and being a part of this episode of the show featuring my conversations with Evan Schiller and Olin Brown. Both of these guys have been very important to me over the course of this show. Evan Schiller joins me for the sixth time. Olin Brown, I think we're well over a couple of dozen times. Evan Schiller, for my money, is the best golf course photographer ever. Please go out to his site, evanschillerphotography.com, and you're going to be blown away by how well he captures each and every golf course that he has gone out to. I'm telling you, these are things that you're going to want to have on your wall, whether it's in your den, your sports room, your living room, anywhere that you want something to be on your wall that's going to pop to your guests and to yourself. Every time you walk in there, you're just going to be like, wow, what an image. What a beautiful golf course. What a photographer. Evan is just fantastic. You're really going to enjoy his work and our conversation. Following him, Olin Brown comes back. Oh, and I spent some time together during the U.S. Open when I was at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company in their tap room. Got to have an opportunity to talk to him about what he was watching in real time, as we all were, seeing Oakmont and the struggles that those guys had. Oh, has played a couple of U.S. Opens there, 1994, 2007. You'll hear those stories. You'll hear about being out on the golf courses. Mr. Palmer was making his last lap in a U.S. Open there at Oakmont in 1994. Was on the course at the same time, unfortunately on the other side, but still got to be a part of it and got to hear what was going on. You'll hear those stories, plus his reactions about what the guys were doing and how they were struggling and dealing with Oakmont and how he dealt with it back in, like I say, 94 and 2007. Folks, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the show and coming back and pressing play on part two of this week's episode. Sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Okay, but before we get into this week's show, I want to start off by giving a shout out to our good friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. TribLive.com is the leading news website for Western Pennsylvania with news around the clock. Pittsburgh pro sports coverage, a high school sports network, a podcast network, which you can find next in the T on. So go out and bookmark TribLive.com or download the TribLive app for free and stay up to date with all the news in Western Pennsylvania and this show. I also want to talk about our friends over at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and Iron City Beer, a brand that I have loved my whole life and started drinking when I was 21 years old, of course. Whether you're a hacker or a scratcher, the secret to a successful day on the links is knowing when it's time to grab an iron, even if that means keeping it in the bag till the 19th hole. If it's been a while since you've reached for Pittsburgh staple beer, it's time to revisit Iron City. Thanks to their incredible new facility in Creighton, the best tasting Iron City beer ever made is now available at a course near you. Iron City pairs well with any lie and sky and serves as a friendly reminder that there's always next round. Iron City beer, best enjoyed while enjoying life. And folks, this year, get ready to experience the game like you've never experienced it before at the Keep. It's the brand new Bill Bergen and Reese Jones co-designed course up at Macklemore. Nestled high atop Lookout Mountain, the Keep offers breathtaking vistas that are even more spectacular in person than they are in the pictures and the videos. With its challenging layout and awe-inspiring views, every round there is an unforgettable adventure. Whether you're taking on the signature holes or just soaking in the scenery, the Keep is where your best golf meets nature's finest backdrop. So grab your clubs and join us up at Macklemore this year. The Keep is open for preview play and it's waiting for you. But you gotta hurry now because spots and availability are filling up fast. So don't wait. Check out both courses, the Highlands and the Keep, for yourself online at themaclemore.com. And then do yourself and your buddies, or yourself and your family a solid by getting your spot reserved now. And experience distance and forgiveness all at once with the new QI35 driver from TaylorMade. QI35 is designed to give golfers more distance from more of the face while maintaining maximized forgiveness through high MOI designs. Whether you're looking for low spin and maximum workability, or easy launch and plenty of adjustability, it's available in low spin, core, and max models. QI35 also has a full assortment of fairway woods and rescues to deliver distance and forgiveness throughout the top end of your bag. Check them all out online at TaylorMadeGolf.com. All right, now back with me is one of my all-time favorites here on the show, and that is 2011 U.S. Senior Open champion Olin Brown. Oh, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Chris. How about you?
Couldn't be better. Here at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company and the tap room, place is packed. Everyone's watching the tournament. Fantastic. So I got to ask you, O, from what you've been watching over the last couple of days, you mentioned right before we got on the air, people are happy here because they're not out there playing. Talk about trying to play. I know you've played out here a couple of times in some of the U.S. Opens. Talk about playing here and what you're seeing.
Yeah, the greens are brutal. The rough is brutal. The contour, the course conditions are extreme. Fairways are contoured and very difficult. And the course is firming up a little, even though it's overcast. You know, they haven't had a lot of sun. So Oakmont's just presenting what it always presents, which is, you know, a level of brutality that's not often experienced on tour.
So let's take that a step further. Oh, the rough that we're seeing these guys get into and having a difficult time getting out of it and moving the ball at any length. How would you play this golf course, and what would you do if your ball was in the rough like that? How do you take your medicine and not let a 4 or 5 turn into a 7 or an 8?
Well, I mean, that's the challenging part, because the rough is so unpredictable. And it's so coarse that it doesn't really offer the players a lot of, I mean, I saw a shot that Bryson hit on 18 out of the rough, and he got it pin high in about 8 or 10 feet and still couldn't make the putt. But you have to have the discipline to lay up with your second shot. But sometimes the rough doesn't even allow the guys to get it 70 yards forward. And so You've got conditions that they don't see on a regular basis. And, you know, with the way the golf ball is behaving and the strength that the players have, the only way to defend a championship really is to make it ultra penal if players are offline. So that's what's happening.
So talk about taking your medicine and the mindset that you've got to have. Right. So in other words, you got to know that you're going to face adversity. You're not going to hit every fairway and every green. How do you have a mindset of, I'm not going to let this course frustrate me? I know I'm going to make some bogeys and some doubles, but it's also not going to take me out of the tournament because these guys are going to be doing the same thing I am.
Well, par is relative. So, you know, on any given week for the guys on tour, par is really 68. If there's a drivable par 4, it's 67. And so, this is why you see with regularity 20 to 30 under par winning on the PGA Tour. You know, you have to make an extrapolation and understand that the golf course just isn't like other golf courses. And so par really is not par 70. Anytime you miss a fairway, it's at least a par plus a half a stroke. And if you miss it twice, it's par plus a full or a full and a half stroke. So reality, I mean, if you look at the scores, the cut's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 or 7 over par, which means if on an average PGA Tour week, let's say 5 or 6 under is making the cut, then par is closer to 80 than it is to 70.
So would that be your mindset going into this thing? Like, look, if I can get out of here shooting 74-ish, I'm still going to be in the tournament.
Well, you're going to have a shot at being in the tournament. You're going to, the cut is going to be right around that 6, 7, 8 number. And so anything can happen on a weekend. You know, if you get weather, suppose you get an early time and you get a hot round, you made the cut on the button, you shoot a few under par, and then the leaders have to play in 25 mile an hour winds. Well, that changes everything. So
you know, all you can do is do the best that you can, add them up at the end of the day, and hope that you put yourself in a position where you can deal with another round the next day. Now, the guys who missed the cut are going to end up going home. But, you know, certainly it's been proven time and again that anybody who's within 5, 6, or 7, or 8 shots of the lead come the weekend has a shot to win it.
You played in the U.S. Open here in 94 and again in 07. And I want to go back to that 94 U.S. Open. You had an extremely early tee time on Thursday, 6:40 a.m. alongside of Mark Lyon, Brian Kam. The heat that year was off the charts. So you got to beat it a little bit on Thursday, but you had to come back on Friday with a 12:10 tee time. So then you were in the heat, the teeth of the heat. I mean, you were right in the peak part of the day. How did you deal with the heat that year?
It was a brutal week. It was a typical Western Pennsylvania heat wave. I think the heat index was in the 113 or 14 degree range, and they were pulling players off the golf course.
Wow.
You know, the course was, the humidity was so high that the course didn't really bake. The rough was absolutely horrendous. They talk about the rough this week, but the rough was so long it was lying down. And I remember on a couple of occasions, the balls running through the green on, say, 1 or 10 or 12, and it would get to the back cut, and the grass was lying down. It was so long that you had to part the grass to find your ball. And then you had a whole different shot value presented on greens that were every bit as quick as they are right now. So Oakmont has always presented that kind of challenge, and the guys are getting the full body right now.
So you mentioned hole number one, and that was one of the things I was curious to get your experience playing, because as I walk that hole, there's a swell short of the first green. There's a swell on the front of the first green. I mean, if you land it on the front of that green and you hit the downslope of that swell, I got to imagine it's bouncing the ball over the green. If you hit the downslope of the swell short of the green, I got to imagine it's shooting the ball over the green. How do you hit a shot into one and hope to hold the golf ball on the green?
Well, it's just, it's an unusual situation because shots that are being played at a course like Oakmont that the players aren't seeing on a regular basis. And the guys who, you know, can use their imaginations to conjure up something given circumstances are the guys who are going to have some success there. And, you know, Oakmont has proven over its history that the guys with the real resumes are the guys who end up holding the cup at the end of the week.
94 was also Mr. Palmer's last U.S. Open. His final round came on Friday. He was several groups ahead of you that day. But were you aware of him as he was going around to each and every green? I got to imagine every place he went to, he was getting a standing ovation.
Yes, I was on the opposite rotation, though. And of course, Arnold Palmer and Western Pennsylvania are like Joe Montana or Dan Marino in Western Pennsylvania. What a great leader, a guy to bring golf into the media age. And, you know, for his last U.S. Open to beat Oakmont, I think is appropriate. And you could tell in his press conference and his interview with Mark Rolfing after the Friday's round what it meant to him and what it meant to everybody in that region. So, yes, it was great to be part of that, although I was on the other side of the golf course.
So where does Oakmont rank for you, amongst the most difficult courses that you've played, whether it's just here in the States or anywhere?
Well, I think most golf courses that hold the U.S. Open have their series of challenges. But Oakmont is historically the kind of course that the USGA doesn't have to do much to make it a real challenge. Now, Beth Page in 2002, when we played in wet weather, was absolutely brutal. And Wingfoot is another one, right? But Oakmont, day in and day out, week in and week out, year in and year out, produces, you know, the most challenges for the most guys. And it's no accident that the USGA is elected to go back for its 10th U.S. Open there. And rightly so. It's one of those places.
One of the popular questions that the media and even Justin Thomas have pontificated on this week is, what would a 15 handicap shoot if they came out here to play? What do you think? Because as I looked at the golf course, and as a guy who's around a 15 handicap, based on the 250-yard force carries that there are off a lot of the tees, and then factoring in the rough and the greens and all that, I think you'd be hard-pressed to break 150.
You're in the right place for this question because it's bar talk. You know, I mean, who knows? First of all, are we dealing with any lost balls in that rough? You know, and if so, that's a re-tee.
if we're not, if we got spotters on every single hole, there are people 15 handicapped legit couldn't advance the ball. And I don't know how many swings it takes to get out of there, but 150 is the baseline, I would think. And it's not, you know, golf is humbling enough. You don't need to deal with that on top of it.
Yeah, so that goes into some of the other comments that some of your peers have talked to me about as we've watched the Open here the last couple of days and the conditions and what these guys are doing. You know, they comment to me, you know, golf's supposed to be fun. I'm not sure what out there is we would call fun.
Well, I'll tell you something that occurred to me in watching Oakmont is that, you know, everybody knows what's lurking on the other side of every shot. If you execute a shot perfectly, you've got a reasonable chance to have a good result. If you mishit a ball or you hit an errant shot, you're at the mercy of the Oakmont gods, right? The problem is that when you do get a chance to take advantage of a high quality shot, the stress level is magnified because, first of all, you don't know how many of those chances you're going to get. Thirdly, you're not getting many to start with. And so the stress level is just at a heightened level starting from the first shot. And it's that way for, you know, the entire week. So the guy who's in contention all week and coming down the wire is really doing himself a favor if he takes off next week, because he's going to need a little bit of recovery time, just because the place is just it's a 72 hole butt whipping, and it's as much as daunting as it is physically in that tournament, it's an emotional wreck for the week. So it's just super difficult.
So let's take something you just said a step further, because if you're out there playing in a practice round, maybe earmark there are a couple of holes. And from talking to some of the members, they tell me 4 through 6, those 3 holes are a place where you can go out and make a birdie. You can attack those holes. Anything else, you've got to be very careful out there. So does that actually make it harder for you to play 4 through 6 if that were the case? If you went out there and said, yeah, I can get these holes. But if you don't, are you really walking off a 6 stressed out because you've given up your only opportunity to make some hay?
Look, here's what I tell people all the time when they ask me, what's the hardest hole? And I go, the hard ones are easy if you play them well, and the easy ones are hard if you screw them up. And so, you know, I'm watching guys hit miraculous shots. I just watched Thorpe Bjorn Olesen hit it to 6 feet on number 12 and make an eagle. Well, there are guys who are begging for their third shot to stay on the green so they don't have to deal with getting up and down for par. And so, you know, the whole thing about Oakmont is that if you pull off the shot you want to pull off, you can make a birdie on virtually every hole. If you don't pull off that shot, you can make a triple on virtually every hole. So to your point, yes, absolutely. The holes that are looking like birdie opportunities, you want to be, you want your focus narrowed and you want to be able to execute some of your better swings there because you want to give yourself a chance. And the rest of the time you're hanging on for dear life. But boy, I'll tell you what, if you get out of position on those quote unquote scoring holes, you're fighting the same problem you're fighting the rest of the golf course.
One of the holes that everyone's been talking about is number 8, the par 3 that's playing around 300 yards. When I was out there on Wednesday, it was playing 303. Today it's playing 299, and that's not factoring in any of the weather, to your point earlier about whether you've got the atmospheric conditions or the wind or any of that sort of stuff. That's just, here's what it's playing. It's playing 299. Talk about trying to play a par 3 that length and hitting something that's actually going to be able to stop on the green.
Well, number 3 and number 17 in 2007, the last year that I played the U.S. Open in Oakmont, played the same length. And so really it's a mentality. The hole is it's the same length, but 8 is actually downhill while 17 is uphill. And so 17, you're looking at it as a birdie opportunity because it says 4 on the scorecard.
You're looking at it as a really challenging hole. But if you take those two holes and you play them in 3.5, you play them in par. And that's kind of the mentality. It's an old school design philosophy. You know, you put holes that kind of move opposite directions that are similar length. One's a par 4, one's a par 5, one's a short par 4, one's a long par 3, and you just do the best you can. Now, a 3 is a 3 and a 4 is a 4, and if you make a 3 on 17, you make a 4 on 8, well, I mean, you've played them in par.
Oh, as we look out and switching gears, talking about the rest of the year for you, What are you looking forward to? What's on your schedule?
US Senior Open's coming up. I had to qualify this year. My exempt status had run out, but I managed to qualify yesterday, so I'm heading out for that. And then I got a few more events during the course of the season, and I'm looking forward to going out and finishing off the year. Got about half the year left, so we'll see how it goes.
Awesome. After that, we're going to get to see you playing next year back out on the Champions Tour? Are you looking at something else?
No, I'll be back out part-time, I would say. We'll see where it goes. I'm going to play out the year and worry about next year, but I'd love to get into talking about golf in some capacity. Maybe you'll have me on your show again and we can talk about some stuff, but there's a lot going on in golf right now. You know, how are we going to present our product? What's happening with the product as it's being presented? Who's going to be playing next year? Who's going to be out of work? And there's so much happening in golf. Where does the PGA Tour live? Battle, what direction does that go? There's a lot happening, and it's going to start when it does. It's going to start happening and moving at a quicker pace. So we got to get our minds around all that, and figure out how we can present golf in a way that, like, I just watched the French Open. I hope you did too. But it was such a good presentation, and it was such a good final match, both the women's and the men's. I would just love to see golf presented in a similar way, where. You know, great championships are honored and we get these epic battles and we let them develop organically instead of trying to manufacture something, right? It seems to me like we're trying to put a square peg in a round hole sometimes. Let's let the play do the talking.
Indeed. One more before I let you go. Give us an update. How's Junior doing?
Great. He was on the bag yesterday while I was qualifying and he dragged me across the finish line, which was very helpful. So he's got a few things coming up this summer and he's still working on his game. And, you know, we're trading off. Sometimes I strap the bag and caddy for him. Sometimes he straps it for me and caddies for me. So we're having a good time together.
Good for you. Oh, before I let you go, remind our listeners that want to stay up to date with all the great things that you're out there doing and follow you on social media. How can they do it?
Olin Brown on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. I got an Instagram, but I just do that to see what's on it. I don't post anything, but come on out and watch some of the PGA Tour champions. We'll put on a great show.
Yes, you do. Oh, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to come and be a part of this show. You're one of my all-time favorites, my friend. Anytime you're ready to talk about everything going on with you and in the future, you know I'm always here for you.
Great. Thanks a million. It's always great visiting with you. While you're at it, check out my daughter's new song, Coastal Highway. It's on Pandora, Alexander Brown Music.
Awesome. Take care. Bye. Oh, all the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
All right, pal. Be well.
You too. See you. That is the great Olin Brown, folks. They don't come better and more important to me and to this show than Olin Brown. He is just absolutely one of the all-time greats on this show and just one of the all-time greats in our game. 2011 U.S. Open champion. Be sure to check out his daughter, Alexandra Brown, and her music. She's got a beautiful voice. And his son, Olin Brown Jr., out there, he's been all over the place, and his game has been building and getting better each and every year. Not going to be a shocker when he comes out on the PGA Tour and gets a big win there. What I would love to see is Olin Brown Jr. and Olin Brown both getting a win on the same day, one on the PGA Tour and one out on the Champions Tour. Fantastic family. Always very important to me. Like I say, he's one of my all-time favorites for a reason. And you heard why during the course of this conversation. We'll get him back on the show again soon. Coming up next is a guy who I consider the greatest golf course photographer on the planet, maybe of all time, and that is Evan Schiller. Before Evan joins me, I want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at On Point Golf, and their out of this world On Point Golf Ball Marker. And if you don't have one, folks, you really need to go check it out at onpointgolf.us. Get the number one ball marker in the game of golf. On Point is the only three-dimensional ball marker out there. With alignment technology and a removable coin that is approved to use according to the rules of golf. As you know, putting is all about line and pace. Mark your ball with OnPoint, engage with your three-dimensional ball marker, and have more confidence in your line, execute the putt, and you're going to lower your scores. Do what the likes of Jim Furyk, PGA professionals, and amateurs alike are doing now. They use the number one ball marker in golf and they lower their scores. You know Ken Duke and Thongchai JD. They won for the first time on the PGA Tour in 2023, and they were using an On Point ball marker. Get yours at onpointgolf.us and make more putts. And oh, by the way, you can also customize the removable coin for any club, event, or corporate outing. They make really great tee gifts and custom products. That's also going to help lower your score. I use On Point ball markers. Mine is black and gold, 3D black golf ball with a gold line down the middle to help me line up my putts. It's like having a 15th club in my bag. It's helped my game. Why wouldn't you let it help yours? Again, onpointgolf.us. See what I'm talking about. Order yours today. All right, now back in Next on the Tee with me is Evan Schiller. As you guys know, Evan is the best golf course photographer ever in my book. Go check out his work online at evanschillerphotography.com. Going back into his golf career, he played his college golf at the University of Miami, where in the 1981-82 season, he helped the team to a third-place finish in the Andy Bean Classic, fourth-place finish at the Furman Invitational, another fourth-place in the Southeast Invitational. And in the all-or-nothing tournament at Athens Country Club, they finished fifth to earn a berth into the national championship tournament at Pinehurst, where they finished 10th. They had another strong year in 1983, and Evan helped them finish second at the FIU Sunshine Invitational. He qualified to play in events on the PGA Tour from 1984 to 1988, including the 1986 U.S. Open at Shinnecock, next year's site. Evan has photographed well over 600 championship courses worldwide, and I couldn't be more honored. I get to have him back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Evan, thanks for coming back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always a treat. Love it.
So, Evan, since we are on the heels of this year's U.S. Open, I want to go back to that U.S. Open you played in at Shinnecock in 86, because like I say, we're going to be back there next year. 86 was the year that Norman had the 54-hole lead in all four of the majors. He ended up shooting 75 in the final round at Shinnecock that year, finishing tied for 12th. Raymond Floyd would go on to win it. But you were there. You played in it. Talk about what you remember from that week.
I don't know if I played in it. It more like it played me. I just remember it was really a blissful experience, even though it was really hard. Especially that first day, it was one of the highest average scoring rounds, I think, in the history of the U.S. Open, because it was raining, it was windy. I went out late, and I just remember I'm wearing a rain suit, it's blowing. And I got to the 14th hole and they called play and I'd hit my ball in the rough. I remember PJ Boatwright came out and said, you know, you can finish or mark your ball. And I said, I'm out of here. Anyway, the next day was beautiful. So I came out and finished and I ended up, you know, missing the cut, but it was, you know, my family came out there, friends came out there, stayed in a friend's house. So it was a really great week, just, you know, being there. And, you know, that clubhouse is, you know, I think it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest clubhouse in the country. There's actually a poster, I think, is still hanging in there that everybody from that U.S. Open signed. I think I did too. It was a great experience. You know, they say that Ray Floyd actually won that tournament on the first day. Because I think he played with Tommy Nakajima, and Nakajima said, yeah, he won it on the first day because he was all over the map and he made a score. And then, you know, well, anyway, we saw what happened. So it was a great week.
And Evan, as a photographer, you've shot so many of the world's great courses. I was surprised that Shinnecock and Oakmont aren't two of them. Are they on at least a list of places that you want to go?
Yeah, you know, I'd love to. I took a few photos of Shinnecock, but it was way back when. You know, most of my shoots that I do come about because, some people don't realize this, they often think I just run around picking golf courses to photograph. But that's not true. All my shoots come about because the golf courses hire me. So they hire me to come in and shoot for a couple of days, shoot all 18 holes. And, you know, so I haven't heard from Shinnecock or Oakmont yet, although Michael McCormick, who is the superintendent at Oakmont, who I met when he was he was the assistant at Oakmont. Then he went to Apawamis in Rye. And then he, I think 2 years ago, he went back to Oakmont as now he's the head greenskeeper there. And great guy. So I'm hoping he might have some influence on having me go to Oakmont at some point. We'll see.
So let's talk about some of the amazing places that you have been that I'm dying to see, starting with Old Head. You were telling me earlier this week that you're headed back to Ireland and Old Head sometime in the August-September timeframe.
Yep.
Talk about that and your thoughts on Old Head.
Well, I've been to Old Head, I think, two or three times already, although it's been a while. It's been actually been a while since I've been back to Ireland. It was pre-COVID. So this is my first trip back in a while. And Old Head, got too many O's going on right now. Old Head is going to be first on the list. Yeah, so I'm really excited to go back there. It's a really, you know, it's not a, you know, a typical, you know, Irish or Scottish Lynx course, but it is certainly one of the most spectacular places. You know, it's set on this promontory that jets out into the ocean. I think from the moment you go through the gate to all the way out to the lighthouse is 1.5 miles, I believe. So it jets out into the to the ocean quite a bit, and you can get some weather out there. But when you get a night, and I mean, I've been out there where it was so windy, you know, people were walking off the course. I mean, we had a chance to go up in the lighthouse one time when we were there and meet with the keeper of the lighthouse, whose family has run that place for probably now over 30 years. And so he actually lives out there and told me some amazing stories. You know, we were on top of the lighthouse and he said, yeah, there's been days, and his little house is down below. It's very small. And he says, I have to seal it like completely, like make it waterproof, because there's days where the waves actually crash over his house. They're so high.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's 75 feet above the water. He goes, sometimes you get waves so big, they're coming over my house, literally.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really an interesting experience. And he said he was there while they were building the golf course. And he said he was amazed they actually built a golf course out there. But to watch the whole, the process of them building the thing. And the course has actually evolved really nicely over the years. So it's a very good, it's a really good golf course, and it's just a spectacular setting. You know, I've never heard anybody say they went to Old Head and didn't enjoy it. You know, it may not be the greatest golf course in the world, but I heard a lot of people who say it's their favorite.
To that end, like you say, yeah, I've certainly looked at your speaking of spectacular, I've seen your pictures of Old Head. You've got them on your site.
Yeah.
Is there an angle? Is there a time of day? Is there something you're looking forward to shooting a little bit differently this time around?
Well, yeah, I think so. You know, the weather always plays a big part. I love the shot when, you know, last time I was there, but it was really windy, so it was hard. Flew my drone out over the water and you shoot back and you get the whole Old Head promontory. But you got to fly quite a bit out. And so when it's windy, it's a little bit hairy because it can get windy. Just maybe capturing some, you know, angles that I didn't get last time. And I'm sure the golf course has changed since I was there last time, as they always do. Early morning and the late afternoon light is just really spectacular, especially if you get some, you know, weather coming in so I don't know if there's anything specific. You know, I'll probably, you know, something will catch my eye when I get there, but yeah, really. And we're staying on property because they have these, which I've never done before. So they have these suites that overlook the 18th hole, which are pretty sweet. So we're going to get to stay right on property. So I'm really looking forward to that.
No doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's excited about that. We're going to spend 2 weeks over there.
Last year at the Tour Championship, we got to see most of the restoration that Andrew Green did to that golf course. I think he finished things up not all that long ago, a couple tweaks here and there, but I wanted to get your thought. What did you think about the work that he did?
Well, it's a completely different golf course than it was, but not completely different than what it originally was, because I think Andrew Green's intent was to restore the as close as he could, and that's always difficult. It's restored as close as he could to the original Donald Ross design. And my understanding is when he got there, he apparently went down to the basement or something. They had old drawings and old photos, and he just studied these for hours and hours. They couldn't pull him out of there. You know, they had to actually bring him food down there. He was so immersed in the history and the old photos. So they worked off old photos and old drawings to restore it. And, you know, over time, a lot of the, well, first of all, they repositioned some greens. They redid a lot of the greens to come back to the original design. And, you know, whereas over time, the bunkers became more sand-faced versus now the Donald Ross design, they're more grass-faced bunkers. And, you know, some of the bunkers that have been removed or brought back in, I just love it. And a lot of the undulations from the old greens were brought back in that were originally there. And I always find, you know, when they do these restorations, you know, and bring it back to what it was, you know, working off old photos, it's always interesting to see how far off over the years, because of, you know, various whatever architects and changing the design, you know, over the years to get away from the original design and then to bring it back. To me, I like it. It's exciting. And just to learn about the whole process of that is really fascinating. I love it. You know, I'm a fan of, you know, old school designs, you know, Alistair McKenzie, Donald Ross, you know, a lot of those guys just did some amazing, you know, Seth Rayner did some amazing work. So I like it.
So speaking of Alistair McKenzie, Pasatiempo is another course that I'd love to play and take a look at one day. McKenzie said it was his best work ahead of Augusta National and Cypress Point. Do you agree with him?
I really love it. You know, I mean, actually, I don't know if I should have even say this. You know, Cypress Point is an amazing golf course. You know, it's on the ocean. It goes through the dunes. You know, it's pretty hard to top that. But Pasatiempo, you know, is all inland. And the design, the green complexes, the bunkering is fabulous. And, you know, what Jim Urbina and Brett Hochstein did there was truly amazing. They worked with, I mean, to restore some of these greens, like for instance, the 16th green, 16th hole there is kind of their signature hole. I mean, they worked with lasering to, they had to dig down like, I think like 10 feet to find the original green.
Wow.
Where, yeah. Cause there was so much, you know, over the years from top dressing and, you know, it just get the old green got buried. So they actually had, I don't know if it was 10 feet, they had to remove a lot of dirt and dig down to find where this old green was. And then they used lasering to calculate, you know, the undulations in the old green. So, I mean, they literally got it to within inches, maybe less, of what the original green was with all this work they did.
Wow.
With the lasering. Yeah, it was really amazing. And they did that with all the greens. And it's in so much better condition than it ever was. And I was just there, I don't know, what, three, four weeks ago. It's, one of my favorite places. When you walk through the clubhouse, there's all this old photos and history and memorabilia. And then they have one of the things, I mean, it's an Alistair McKenzie design, but it was Marion Holland's vision. And she also, I mean, she doesn't get her due. She doesn't get enough kudos or respect for some of the work she did, not only Pasatiempo, but Pebble Beach, Cypress Point, I mean, and Augusta. She had influence on all of them. In fact, I don't know if people know this, but she was very involved in developing Cypress Point. And originally she had hired Seth Rayner to design Cypress Point, but he died. before.
Wow, is that right?
Yes. So she ended up hiring Alistair McKenzie, who then, you know, did Cypress Point, Pasatiempo, and Augusta.
Yeah.
Wow. Because Bobby Jones came out and played Pebble Beach, I think it was the U.S. Amateur, and got knocked out, went over to play Pasatiempo with Marion Hollins, and just loved the work so much, goes, I want this guy to design Augusta with me.
Wow. That's a great story.
Yeah. So there's the history of the place is amazing. And so I was actually thrilled to be there for a couple of days and get some good weather.
You said about it on social media that Pasatiempo may have the best collection of par threes anywhere. What made you say that?
Because it might. I mean, people would argue, you know, it's the third hole, people say it's a par three, but say people say it's the greatest short par four in the world. It's just the variety, the bunkering, you know, it's just, you know, there's a combination of long and short. The green complexes are just, you know, are really amazing. You know, 15 is a great little short par three with it, kind of the green set in right behind this barranca and in the trees. And, you know, three is, this, you know, bare of an uphill, you know, par three. So they're really good. Yeah, they're really good.
Evan, I had Taylor Crosby on the show a couple of months ago. He's one of the lead instructors out at Reynolds Lake Oconee. They've got seven amazing golf courses out there on the property. You said if you go, be sure to play the Creek Club at Jim Eng designed. What captured your attention about that golf course?
Well, it's the only private course there. And it's, I always love Jim Eng's design because they're really, some people may not like them. They may think they're a little quirky or off, you know, offbeat, but, you know, some of his designs, I like them. I like the way it's different, you know, with the way he, you know, mounds his greens and the fairways. And it's unique. It's really unique. It's not like any, you know, he's not like any designer you see. I just like the whole way, especially his greens are just very unique. Like one you don't really see with the way he just, you know, like for instance, the 18th hole there is actually a triple green. They have three greens.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. And they can move it around. Yeah. There's like three greens. It's great. I mean, it's like, who does that?
Yeah. The Macklemore, as you may remember, they're one of my partners here on the show. I know you photographed the course up there. Bill Bergen, Reese Jones have collaborated now on two courses up there on the property, the Highlands course and the Keep, which I'm excited to go check out later this year. Have you checked the Keep out yet?
I was there in September.
Is that right?
They had not finished it. There was still a lot of construction, a lot of dirt and machines hanging around. But you know, they wanted some photos for, you know, media purposes. So I was there and I'm going back, in a couple of weeks, actually, 3 weeks, I think I'm going back there because everything's grown in now. It's supposedly looking really great, but you know, they had a tough winter, so it's taken a little bit longer for stuff to, a tough spring, I guess. So it's taking things a little bit longer, but I'm heading back there, beginning of July for a couple days, and I'm anxious. I mean, it's, the setting's unbelievable. And it sits on these cliffs and these little, I don't know what you call it. Yeah, it basically sits on the cliffs. And these, you know, they work some of the routing along, you know, along the cliff. So I think there's, I don't know, five or six holes that run right along the cliffs. And then there's some that are just inside of it. And the views you get everywhere from almost every hole, you get a great view. So I'm looking forward to going back in a few weeks. So yeah, they did a great job. Really, really
Yep. Yeah, they did. I mean, I was up there, not all that different from when you were there last year, and we saw kind of the layout, but yeah, there was still a lot to get done. But, you know, being along the cliff edge of Lookout Mountain for several of them, and the vistas from, to your point, pretty much from anywhere on the golf course, you're looking out over the edge of the cliff and the horizon. It's just, it's spectacular for anybody who hasn't been out there. And I'm waiting for the Keep to show up on some of these, you know, best course, you know, best new course for 2025 or, you know, top courses you can play. It's got to show up there at some point.
I would imagine it's going to be in the running. Well, whether it wins it or not, I don't know, but it, it's got to be in the running. And, you know, the, you know, you, there's this one, it's along the cliff, but it's almost like this one, like, but the cliff kind of is a jagged edge. So, you know, they like, it's almost like a little ravine that comes in. So it's like runs along this kind of jagged edge of the cliff, which is, it's just very cool. And it's a great compliment to the other course. Great place.
Indeed. So we've talked about a few different course designers. Do you have a favorite one? Do you lean slightly one way or another, McKenzie or Rainer? Or do you have one that you like, you know, maybe that this one's my favorite by a little bit?
Yeah.
Do you mind naming names?
McDonald, Banks, and Rainer.
Yeah. So
they all worked together at one point.
So, is that right?
Know, yeah. Charles Banks is a protege of McDonald and Rainer. In fact, Banks actually finished several projects of Seth Rainer because Seth didn't, Rainer died early. You know, or like I think Whippoorwill, I think, was originally Seth Rainer and Banks finished it. Knollwood, same thing, was a I think Seth Rainer drew up the design, but he never got to start the project because he passed away. So Charles Banks finished it off. So there was a few projects like that. So I don't, you know, all three of those guys worked together, and you know, I don't know that Charles Banks gets his due for, you know, his influence there.
It's interesting that you mentioned CB McDonald. I know a great friend of this show, Hal Sutton, just created a course not that long ago, right? It's just been open for a short time, Darmore, down outside of Houston, and he used the CB McDonald template to create a lot of those golf holes, which I'm excited to get my eyes on it too at one point.
Yeah. And, you know, like the creek. I mean, I love the creek. You know, I mean, I know there's a lot of great golf courses on Long Island, but that might be my favorite.
Is that right? Yeah, there's a ton of great golf out there.
I just love that place. The setting is great. And, you know, there's also, speaking of, you know, golden age architects, I don't know if you heard about it, but there's a golf course called 21 Club in South Carolina near Aiken, where a lot of those other, you know, courses have been developing lately. There was an original Alistair McKenzie design that never, Boquero, I think it's called, Boquero. It's an original design that was never built. They were going to build it in South America, in Argentina, but it never got built. So the owner of the property is going to recreate that design the best he can in South Carolina.
Is that right?
Yes.
I'd have to look it up, but I'm not sure, but it could be. Shane LeBaron is a wonderful instructor, and there's a new course that he has just moved over to that they are in the process of building, and I think it could be that one. It
could be. Right. I mean, I don't even know. They've just been moving dirt. I don't even know if they started to grass anything yet, but they've got some digital renderings of it, and it just looks amazing, and I think they've got a whole team together, but I think Jim Urbina is one of the guys who's going to be doing it.
Just a couple more before I let you go. Is there a course that perhaps most people may not be familiar with, a hidden gem that you've seen that you think that, boy, this club isn't getting the attention it should? People really need to see this one.
Well, you know what? First comes to mind It's a place I was just at, in Dallas, Brook Hollow. You know, it's not on most people's radar, but I mean, it's probably ranked the top five courses in Texas. It's an old tilling. I mean, it looks, now it's private. So, you know, I don't, you know, most people probably not going to be able to play unless you know a member or they can do a reciprocal or something like that. But it is fantastic. It's a Tillinghouse golf course. And it literally, I mean, it's in the middle. It's actually in a really, one guy called it a ghetto, but I mean, it's not in the best neighborhood, but you drive through the gates and it's like you're in Shangri-La. It's an old Tillinghouse golf course. I mean, it really looks like it should be in the Northeast. And Keith Foster just finished doing a restoration, I think 2 years ago. And it is fabulous. I loved it. I mean, you know, it has the, you know, the grass face bunkers, squared off greens, you know, the weight, the like has the great hazard they recreated on the 15th hole. But then there's also these little waste areas all around. It was, I just thought it was really great. I loved it. You know, it's pretty, given with social media, it's pretty hard for any golf course to hide. You know, it's like, I know Hidden Gem is kind of over it, but you know, it's like, it is, it's hard for any golf course. I mean, you get on social media, no longer you're not hidden anymore. You know, there's so many great golf courses that are popping up. You know, I was just at the Ocean Forest. You know, it's another private course, but Bo Welling just renovate it, and it's just, wow, did an amazing job. Just, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of architects doing a lot of great work out there restoring, you know, build new builds, so there's plenty of golf, you know.
Indeed,
there's plenty of golf going on. Yeah, so, and as far as the ones, yeah, that's the one that comes to mind that I was most recently at, that I really love.
Okay. You've talked about how you're going out to Old Head. You talked how you're going back to check out the Keep. What are the things do you have coming up the rest of the year?
Well, let's see. I'm going to Ireland the end of August, beginning of September for 2 weeks. We're going down to Old Head, and then we're going to work our way up north. Lahinch, Carn, Enniscrone, Rosapenna. Let's see, in a couple of, I'm going to shoot the upper course at Baltusrol, which is just reopened after Bill Hans restored it. Actually, next week, I'm going to be out in Long Island. There's a new Discovery Land property called The Hills. Going out to shoot that. Then, you know, in a couple of weeks, I go to the Keep. And then I go up to the Cape to shoot Oyster Harbors. And then I go out to Wisconsin, back to Sand Valley, which I haven't been back since they did Sedge Valley. And I haven't been out since they built, built the new courses there. Then back for a little bit and then off to Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. So, some good stuff coming up.
No doubt. So how can our listeners stay up to date with all the great things that you're out there doing? Remind them how they can follow you online and on social media.
Sure. Well, you can always go to my website, evanschillerphotography.com. I'm on, you know, Instagram a lot, Evan Schiller Photography. You can find Evan _Schiller_Photography. You can find me there. You can find me on X, LinkedIn. I mean, I'm sure you just type in my name, it'll come up. So yeah, I'm pretty active on all those things. And there's lots to look at on my website. People can purchase prints if they want. So
yeah, it's fantastic. You're the best, my friend. I tell you, when I go out to your website and I take a look at, you know, your work, it's just stunning. I mean, that's word maybe used a little overused, but that's exactly what it is. Yeah. You know, you look at the pictures that you have and the way that they're presented and the steel, my goodness, you get something put on steel and that thing is just going to pop. No matter where you hang it in your house. So kudos to you, my friend.
The Lido. Sorry. That's the Lido. Wow. My mind went the Lido at Sand Valley. I haven't been out there since they did that. And that's, you know, Tom Doak recreated the Lido, which was on Long Island. The original Lido was on the South Shore, Long Island, and then they pulled
that
up.
Right?
Oh, yes, and so Tom Doak recreated it at Sand Valley. Well, obviously it's not on the water, but
yeah.
But they bulldozed it under for the war to create a base, you know, an airstrip.
Is that right?
Yep.
Is there something that commemorates that? Like, if you went out to Long Island, would you see a sign or something on that?
I'm gonna be out on Long Island at the Hills next week, and I'm gonna see if I can find out where it is.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if there's any signs of it there, because I mean, I'm sure the airstrip is, you know, where they used it for as an airbase for World War II. Because it obviously is close to, you know, the ocean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything there. But, South Shore of Long Island. I'm not sure exactly where. But
no, yep. That would be a great find. Good luck.
Yeah, and it's an original Alistair Mackenzie design.
Wow. And we lose that to history. Sure. But hopefully there's something there that kind of points you in the direction, like here was where it used to be.
Sorry, it's not Alistair. McDonald Raymer.
Okay. Yeah. But still.
Yeah. Yep.
Evan, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. You're the best, my friend. I can't thank you enough for everything you've meant to me in this show over the years.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. I hope we get this privilege again soon.
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All the best to your family. See ya.
Okay.
Thanks. See ya, Evan.
Bye.
That's a great Evan Schiller, folks. S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R is the spelling of his last name. EvanSchillerPhotography.com is his website. Evan_Schiller_photography is where you're going to find him on social media. I'm telling you, folks, you got to go out there and check out his website. When you scroll through, you can do it many different ways, by the course name, by the state. You can see all of his fantastic work. And I tell you, if you get some of these things printed out and you stick it on your wall, it's going to make your wall pop and people are going to gravitate to see what it is, how great the detail, how great the lighting is, and just what his overall talent is. You're going to be blown away by it. And like I say, the selection, we talked just barely about all the great places that Evan has been and the courses that he's done. You're going to really love it, I tell you. And then on top of all of that, as we get a little bit closer, and hopefully we get the opportunity to get Evan back on the show towards the end of the year, because his calendar is spectacular. I order it every single year. It's posted right up here in my studio, right near everything. So I can take a look at that. You're going to love that as well. It's going to make a great holiday gift for the golfer in your life. So go check that out as well. Get a print, get a calendar. You're going to really be a hero for somebody. But like I say, hopefully we get the opportunity to catch up with Evan, like I say, a little bit later on in the year. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on part two of this week's show. My sincere thanks again to Olin Brown and Evan Schiller for joining me. Again, scheduled to join me next week are our resident director of instruction, Tom Patrick, will be back, fresh off his marathon day of golf to raise money for the local Southwest Florida PGA section and their charities. One of the all-time great instructors in the Met section, John Kennedy, also one of the most decorated PGA professionals we have in our game, John Kennedy, he will be back with me. And making his next on the tee debut is going to be Kyle Malou, one of the emerging brands in golf, Sunday Swagger. He is their chief marketing officer. So looking forward to hearing all about the great things that those folks are out there doing. So it's going to be a fantastic show, my friends. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to the great folks over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triblive.com and you can find this show by clicking on the sports section tab, and the most recent episode is going to be right there for you, front and center on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on sports and then podcast network. You're going to see the Next on the Tee logo. If you click on that, many of the most recent episodes are going to be available for you right there. You can also find this show over on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and golfnewsnet.com. But as always, my friends, I can't thank each and every one of you enough for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on Trib Live or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.